Welcome to this episode in celebration of the International Open Access Week 2025. My name is Helgi Sigurbjörnsson and I am a librarian at the National and University Library of Iceland. Every year, the university libraries in Iceland use this opportunity to talk about open access and bring awareness to it. This year's theme is Who Owns Our Knowledge? And today we're joined by Per Pippin Aspas, librarian at the Arctic University of Norway, or University of Tromsø. He has an extensive knowledge on all things related to open science and is currently a part of a group working to create a Nordic capacity hub for Diamond Open Access Publishing. So can you tell us just a little about yourself?
Yes, I have a background in history and philology. But I've been working here at the University Library since 2009. And in the last 10 years or so, I've been working more and more on open science related matters, and especially open access.
The Icelandic government hasn't implemented any regulations about the use of open access here in Iceland yet. But in Norway, you are much further afield. So it's very good for us to be able to look to you as an example of how to do things in open access. So it's very good to have a talk to you about these things. And one of the things that the Arctic University in Tromsø does is you host this yearly conference, the Munin Conference. And it is hosted in English, so it's an international conference. And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. It's a conference that started in 2006, I believe. So it's now the 20th time that we have this conference. It's called the Munin Conference on Scholarly Publishing. So lots of things about publishing in general, but most of it has to do with openness of research, and not just publishing of articles in open access, but also research data sets and other kinds of outputs. Open education is also a thing that is being discussed there. And of course, also now, as everywhere, the challenges of artificial intelligence and how to make use of it and how to sort of handle the more problematic aspects to that development. So it's a conference that lasts for 2 or 3 days with some workshops and also, of course, a conference dinner and some mingling and things like that, as it's supposed to be on a conference. So it brings together people. Many people who join the conference are from research administrative side and the library side, but we do have lots of champions, you could say, of openness in science, openness in education, that also come, people who are researchers and teachers in academia. So it's a great great way to have these conversations crisscrossing the different sectors of, you could say, the academic world. And we also have the publishers there. They come with posters and sometimes with presentations and panel discussions where they can make a stance on open access and where they stand there.
Yeah, that's it's great to hear, because these conversations are very important in order to get this get the cooperation going, basically. So yeah, you also host the podcast Open Science Talk, which is a podcast about open science and open access and other things related to open science. And of course, I would like to suggest that everyone interested in open science should check it out. But can you tell us about that work too, maybe? It's an outreach program, I guess, in some ways, to get people to know about open science, basically.
But, absolutely, it's an outreach activity, and it was started by a former colleague here at the University Library. He came from journalism. He had been part of the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation. That was one of his jobs before he started here at the library. And the first meeting he went to, there was all this talk about open science. He hadn't a clue back then. So he was so curious, and he said, "This is something the world needs to know more about." So he started this podcast. So all credit to my former colleague here. But he only was here for 2 or 3 years, and then he went on to another job, and it was sort of left over to me, who have no background in journalism, to try and do my best to let this podcast live on. And like Erik Liung, although I work on open science related matters every day, I'm still curious about what's going out on out there in the world. So have the opportunity to have conversations with people who do something in this field to move it forward. Institutions, for instance, that have innovative ways of supporting researchers in practicing open science, researchers that have built up small infrastructure initiatives, etc., that helps other researchers. So it's about exploring this field and trying bring this out in English then, to so that not only Norwegians but also people abroad can listen and benefit hopefully from these conversations.
Yeah, like in Norway, are there a lot of initiatives in open science there? Like, or are you working together, or is it just everybody in their own corner doing their own thing, or?
It's a little bit mixed picture. You have some centralized initiatives. You know, Norway is not a big country in terms of population. We are a little bit bigger than Iceland, but we are extremely big in terms of geography. So we are very spread out. And also there is this tradition of a little bit of an autonomy for the universities. So although we have central regulations from the governments, etc., it's yeah. The spirit is that the government doesn't want to control too much what each institution is up to. So yes, there is a national agency. For instance, now an important aspect of open access is to have self-archiving or institutional repositories where all kinds of materials, master's theses, doctoral dissertations, and journal article copies can be stored openly. So these repositories used to be made by each institution and hosted very distributed, but it's now a central agency that has taken over this. So it's called Nasjonalt Vitenarkiv, so the National Knowledge Archive of Norway. So it is a central service with distributed participants, librarians, and research administrative staff helping out locally. But the entire server, you could say, is hosted in one place in Norway. But we do have other initiatives, like an initiative in open data that started here at our university. It's called University of Tromsø, the Arctic University of Norway, by the way. It's a long, long official name. I'm obliged to mention it. But it started out as an initiative to help researcher here locally to put out their research data sets online in a professional manner. I mean, everybody can upload something on the internet, but it doesn't mean that it's actually easy for others to use. Lots of things to think about with metadata, so that others can find it by searching for the right keywords, etc. Things like what kind of computer programs do you use when storing them? Is it an open source software, or is it something that is very special that not everybody has on their computer, etc. So these technical aspects as well, very important. So it started out as a local initiative here, with the library interacting with some research groups here, but then it became so popular that other institutions also heard of it and wanted to have their own research data archives. And in the end, they just found out, why don't we join the guys in Tromsø? So we set up a model where others could chip in and be part of this, which is now called Dataverse NO. And Dataverse as a system was not our invention. It's an open source system developed in Harvard originally, and it's now used by many, many institutions across the world. So, I mean, there are many, many researchers that don't use Dataverse NO, and we don't force them to. They can use other archive services if they want to, but in some fields there are no good archives yet, so they prefer to interact with the librarians locally and upload their data in this Dataverse NO, and the librarians then help them out with structuring the metadata and do the formatting advice that needed for it to be, as they say, fair data, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable.
Yeah, exactly. We have a similar story about open data here in Iceland. There was a just one part of the Iceland University, the social sciences, needed
A research data archive that became DataIce or Gagnis.
Yeah, now I want to talk a little bit about this Nordic Diamond Open Access Capacity Hub. That is actually why the first time I met you was online, because of that, because we were starting this cooperation between the Nordic countries. Finland, Norway, and Sweden and Denmark had already started the talks, and then you decided, is there somebody in Iceland to talk to about these things? And you contacted us, which was great, because basically almost in the same month, almost we were taking over the
The Open Journal System, or OJS, from the University of Iceland that we use to publish journals in open access.
and so just getting all this feedback and stuff from you was just a great thing at that time, and still is, of course. But so benefits for us seem to be a lot in this Nordic cooperation. But what are your views on this cooperation on Diamond Open Access?
Sure, I think the Nordic region is, although we are different countries with different languages, we still have many, many things in common. One thing is, you could say, the welfare state, of course, and the other aspect is that university education is primarily a thing in the public domain. It's funded primarily by taxpayers' money. So we have this situation here, which is very similar. And I think that's also is a very good foundation for this kind of non-commercial cooperation, where we, as tax-funded librarians, can help tax-funded researchers share everything openly for the entire societies around us. So it's a thing about the we are obliged to help with the democratization of knowledge, and this is a very good way to do it, that we who are involved in the services for researchers can talk together to make each other better and exchange ideas. And I think it's if somebody has been long in a field, doesn't need necessarily mean that they have the best solutions and the best answers on how to do it. So it's really, really great that you who are starting up can come with fresh ideas, and you don't have to repeat the mistakes that others have done in the past, right? So I think benefits for you, but also for the rest of us too, because it's always a great benefit to have someone from, you could say, from the outside coming into a new field and starting exploring it. Then you always have the right answer questions where we don't have the right answers necessarily. So
I was wondering also, like, a part of this work is connecting the national nodes, the work, the cooperation that's going on in each country per se, before connecting that together to a larger Nordic picture, basically. Just to so you have a national node there in Norway, and can you tell us a bit about, yeah, how it functions, basically?
There is a very flat structure there, Which is good. We use Microsoft Teams as a platform for continuous discussions, and then there is a monthly digital meeting between librarians who are involved in hosting OJS platforms. And OJS means Open Journal Systems, and it's also one of those open softwares that are used for promoting open science worldwide. So I think it's 8 to 10 institutions across Norway that have an OJS installation. Some have just one journal there. Others have in the range of 20 or 25 journals. So it's a big difference between the various institutions that have their institutional OJS platforms. But we have very similar challenges. And one of them is to have enough resources and to make this robust enough. So that's very good to have this kind of grassroots collaboration where we can help each other out. If somebody has a problem with some kind of bug in the system or something, then there's always someone else to ask outside your own institution, which is a great benefit to all of us. So that is the OJS Norge network, as it's called, the OJS network of Norway, which is in effect the capacity center for Norway.
I've been working on the OJS system here in Iceland, and once you get to know it, it might be quite good to work with. But getting into that is it is a learning curve. So I believe being able to talk to somebody who has more experience and stuff is absolutely vital for that system, basically. We at the Iceland University, there are, I think, about 8 or 9 journals that are in OJS, but there are more instances of the system in other places here that we are yet to find. So it might take a little bit of time to establish a good Icelandic note in this thing, but that is the work that we are in road to do. And of course, we also have this open access working team that with that have the university libraries in, and we are going to try and to like implement that into a national note, basically. So yeah, it's a lot of work is being done, which is good. Another thing I was wondering is, I know the Arctic University, University of Tromsø, has a center for Sami studies. So I was wondering what your thoughts were on how Diamond Open Access can support research within minor language communities, such as Sami and also Icelandic. And access, how does it benefit these small language communities?
I think it can benefit them in many ways. One of them being that, as you say, there are small language communities. I would include Norwegian on that list, actually, where 5 million maximum speakers. So journals that are publishing and books that are published in Norway, of course, they reach a very small community compared to an English language book, for instance. And this also means that the commercial potential isn't really there. So I mean, there is a need for public money in that, and everybody realizes it, and especially so for Sami, which is an endangered language, or at least, or rather, there are several forms of Sami, and some of them are on the brink of extinction. Others are doing well, but none of them are really robust in terms of the number of speakers. So I think to save smaller languages, we need to use them for all kinds of purposes. We need to have newspapers, we need to use them on social media, etc. But we also need to go all the way up to research and peer review to research, because that's to have the vocabulary, the academic vocabulary needed for it to be used in research, for instance, you need to constantly use it and refine it. And Diamond Open Access can help in that sense. We don't have many Sami language journals, but we do have one here in northern Norway. It's called Sami Djedalas Eigachala. I hope I pronounced that correctly because Sami is not my mother tongue. And that journal is hosted on the platform here at our university, actually. We get some funding, national funding for some support for it, but most of it is done by the researchers themselves in collaboration with the librarians. There is no outsourcing of anything. And what then is the point to publish science or research in such small communities, I think, or languages? Well, I think to actually reach the wider community to contribute to the democratization of knowledge, we need to use other languages than English, because not everyone is as fluent in English as we tend to think they are. So it's always a huge language barrier for people in outside of academia to read something in English. But it's, of course, it is not such a great barrier to read scientific stuff in your own language. And that's why multilingualism is a good thing. And the Diamond Open Access model, which is at the core of it, it's dependent on some kind of idealism or governmental funding. I think that's a very good match between those two.
In Iceland, we have this discussion often about whether we should continue creating journals and scientific journals in Icelandic because we have such a small community. But then there's always this idea about how this actually, this is one part of the language that we must sustain, which is the scientific part of it. If you can't articulate the scientific part of the language, then that's just a part of a language basically dying because it won't have the. So it's very important to keep it alive and keep it evolving. And scientific journals are a big part of that, I would say. If we go back to Diamond Open Access, and I was wondering what is your vision for the future of academic publishing? We are seeing this change in, for example, funders who want you to publish open access, Diamond Open Access, and there is a momentum in Europe for to go the open access way, but. So that is a big shift from the traditional publishing landscape where even the author needs to pay or the reader needs to pay for what he's seeing. But so hopefully we can make a change. But what would that basically change? What is your vision of that this might do for academic publishing, basically?
Yeah, that's a vague and complicated question, but something that we shouldn't take light upon, I think. We must think ahead. So what is the use, for instance, to build up all these platforms for Diamond Open Access publishing if publishing will look totally different in just 5 years from now? I think publishing will exist in a shape and a form that we can recognize both 5 years from now and 15 years from now. Although there will be innovative alternatives, but they will perhaps grow in certain fields and have no uptake in other fields at all. So that's what we see, for instance, with these preprint servers worldwide. As in some fields, everybody nods, oh, preprint service, archive, bioarchive, psycharchive. And these are in some of the hard sciences, these are very, very popular alternatives. And I even heard people from mathematics saying, for instance, why do we have to have a journal? We can just upload our works in progress to archive, have comments, make a version 2, have new comments, have a version 3, We don't need to have the formatting and the layout and so you could say the stamp of this or that publisher or this or that peer-reviewed journal. We can share whatever we do in that way. And if I mention this to a historian, for instance, what are you talking about? I mean, you just need to publish something in a traditional format with all the footnotes perfectly prepared, and if you don't, then you don't have a publication on your CV, so you can't go move forward. You need to write journals, traditional journals, traditional books even. It's fine that these are online, but the format is and the process is it's almost exactly the same as 30 or 50 or 200 years ago. So I think these platforms are needed, maybe not for all fields in science, but I think we will have plenty of work to do in the foreseeable future. And one of the things which is a little bit provocative, perhaps from my side, but I think we must use our library budgets better to help researchers who are not happy with being with the very, very commercial publishers out there, that sort of the so-called paper mill publishers, and are constantly put under pressure from the publisher. Now you must increase the volume of articles published per year. 200 per year is not enough. You must up to 300 within the next 2 years or something. I know these kinds of conversations are quite common when researchers sign contracts with commercial publishers. And that's how, you could say, that's how capitalism works. But not every researcher is a fan of that. They want to do something else, but where to go? So I think there we have the library budgets that we can be more restricted on what we pay to the big publishers, maybe cancel some of the big deals with the major international publishers. They have some side effects to them, but then we can also simultaneously spend the money that we save on helping researchers who want to leave the traditional model and go over more to the diamond way of doing things, where you are reliant on public money. You perhaps don't make much money, but you make enough to for your research field to thrive and for your works to be published in open access in a very democratic way, which I think is a good carrot for many researchers, maybe not for all, but for many. So I think we will have plenty to do, Helgi,
Yeah.
in the years to come.
Thank you for this talk. It was quite good to get your points. And yeah, thank you.